Welcome to ATS Mix.
And I think until you start asking questions, you know, you're just going to buy whatever's offered to you on the 6 o'clock news.
ATS Mix.
This isn't a talk show, it's a freak show.
From AboveTopSecret.com.
But also be skeptical of the people who are out there selling conspiracy theories.
The Internet's most popular conspiracy theory discussion board. ATS Mix from AboveTopSecret.com.
In the name of Christ, just let us in!
Starts now.
And it is the ATS Mix episode number 78. And of course, yours truly is along with his truly. I'm Johnny Anonymous. That makes you.
And I'm Dave. I'm Dave Rabbit most of the time. What's going on, bro?
A lot. A whole lot.
Hey, you know, 78, we're two away from 80.
Yes.
And you don't need a calculator to figure that one out, do you?
I did not.
What do we got going on 78, by the way? Speaking of two away.
Lots of things happened. In fact, we need to remind some of our listeners here that when we do our shows, we do it in sections and parts. So we're going to hear us mention in several segments here, I believe also the Skeptic Overview and also with our interview that we do about a particular event that happened in Phoenix, Arizona with a bunch of UFO lights and stuff going on, which we now have found out is probably a big hoax. But at the time of our making this, we thought that it was pretty incredible and we didn't know what to think of it. So please keep that in mind when you're listening to the show. You're going to, oh, what's that? That's old news. That's just a hoax they're talking about.
All right. Well, another thing is, you know, one thing I really enjoyed, John, is that we're doing some of our classic blasts from the past things. And this show, we're going to dig up from the graveyard. Kids with finger guns. I love that one.
Yeah.
So, and I think people have fun with that.
Yeah. And then, of course, we've got the Skeptic Overview, which is always a lot of fun with Bill Irvin.
Yes. Talking to the boss is always. It kind of reminds. Well, no, I won't go there. And then we have part one of the interview with your old bud, Frank Warren. Boy, what a great, great, great interview that was.
Yeah, in fact, it was so great, we had to break it up into two parts, so you're going to get to hear the conclusion next week.
Yeah, part one, baby. And then we end with the rabbit's rant, which is everybody's favorite. Yeah. And we're going to rant about the beer and gas scenario and all that stuff. And, John, we also, don't we want to remind, was that Agent X I hear?
Agent X is calling me, so we need to wrap up this intro.
Okay. Quickly, before X hangs up, we want to remind everybody that people, other sound offs that you have posted, and people call our toll-free number, 1-877-417-2204. That's 1-877-417-2204, to call and leave a message about what they feel about them.
Wow, I'm going to have to change your name to Speedy Gonzalez.
Is he there?
Yeah.
Okay, we got to go, folks. We got X on the phone.
This is ATS Mix.
What? Whoa, what am I hearing?
What is this?
From AboveTopSecret.com.
Oh, crap!
Here are your anomalous sightings
from around the world.
Reporting sightings from around Europe, this is Sam Willie of AlienationSam.com and UFO-radio.net. This week, an orange light over Switzerland and four amber lights over Scotland. We begin with a mysterious light over Bern, Switzerland. The object observed by the witness appeared to be a star-like orange light and was spotted 30 to 40 degrees above the horizon and seemed to firstly fly in the observer's direction, getting brighter as it did so. After approximately 1 minute, the light, which was described as being pretty strong at this point, disappeared. The witness was able to rule out a number of explanations, including general air traffic, stating the object was still for at least 20 minutes and the light was constant with no blinking. The witness is keeping an open mind about the experience, and the sighting was reported to HBCC UFO Research. The sighting took place on April 19th, 2008 at around 9:20 p.m. To Edinburgh, Scotland now, and on April 12th, 2008 at 9 p.m, the witness was driving towards a train station when he noticed to the right side of him four amber lights in the sky. It is reported that they were moving slowly and not in formation as they disappeared behind a cloud. The witness later recalled two of the objects were close to collision and therefore could not be air traffic. The sighting was firstly reported to UFO Info and later also reported in a local newspaper. No rational explanation has been presented at this stage. This is Sam Willie reporting for AboveTopSecret.com.
This is Tamaril from God Box Cafe with reports from across Canada. This week, we start in Eastern Ontario, my neighborhood, in fact. A suburb close to the Pearson International Airport where a resident reported observing an orange ball in the sky for over 4 weeks. From the vantage point of a 10th-floor apartment facing northwest towards the airport, the witness is accustomed to observing planes and helicopters on their daily flight paths and at first thought nothing of this orange glowing ball that appeared to be a particularly bright star or satellite. However, having seen it in the same place every night for an entire month, the witness was compelled to take a closer look through a telescope and described it as a burning ball which seemed to flicker colors, including red, orange, and green. No conclusion was drawn as to its classification, but observation continues, and I'll certainly have a look. Meantime, in Surrey, BC, on April 25th at about 3:20 p.m., a witness was sitting on their deck enjoying the sunny afternoon while planes dipped through clouds on their approach to the YVR, only to be startled by the sound of a police chopper circling north of the building. The witness reported seeing a set of contrails appear from behind the clouds to the west of the chopper at about 60 degrees above the horizon, probably about 30,000 to 40,000 feet. At first, the assumption was that this was generated by a 747, but with the aid of binoculars, the witness described two mirror-like cylinders reflecting the sun's rays. Two contrails appeared behind the objects, while two additional trails were emitting from an unseen source. No wings or engines were visible, and no sound was coming from the objects as they headed for a large cloud. Visual acuity was bumped up again with a spotting scope, and the contrails appeared again, but the objects had disappeared off the original south-southeast course, swinging wide to proceed directly south. According to the witness, no plane would ever deviate that sharply from their course. Approximate viewing time was 2 to 3 minutes, covering the entire sky. This is Tamaril from God Box Cafe reporting for AboveTopSecret.com.
These are the reported sightings over the United States. This is David C. In Texas, a larger-than-a-commercial airliner-sized object crossed the highway moving southward. The angle that was first observed as it crossed the highway was from its side as it banked. There were 4, 5, or 6 large white circle-shaped lights within the crisscrossing latticework. Smaller red, yellow, and greenish lights were set within the X's. The side profile was pistol-shaped on the north side, somewhat like an upside-down plane in shape. The lower section also had an X-weave, with red, yellow, and greenish lights within the latticework. The object slowly banked, showing a huge triangular shape. The lighting pattern became a V-pattern, exposing rows of 5 or 6 white lights on both exposed sides. The object was now on the south side of the highway, banking as it moved with the hypotenuse size leading. As observers continued to drive, all the while never hearing any loudness, the large object passed over the highway. In Minnesota, 3 objects were spotted high in the sky. 2 objects were orange in color. The third was a bright white color. The white-colored object was almost in the center of the formation, but was lower than one of the 2 orange objects. One of the orange objects looked larger than the other and appeared to be moving closer to the viewer. As the viewer stayed at the same spot to watch these objects, one of the orange objects, the one not getting larger, moved up, then down rapidly, and then moved and stayed near the white object. In California, a light orange and reddish glowing object was reported flying across the sky from south to north. It appeared to travel the entire sky in about 6 seconds. It was reported to be faintly lit and seemed too slow for a falling star and too fast for an airplane. This is David C. reporting for AboveTopSecret.com.
Now, from the AboveTopSecret.com mobile headquarters team, currently parked outside the Bellevue Hospital in New York, New York, it's the ATS Mix with Dave Rabbit and Johnny Anonymous. Here's a Dave and Johnny classic blast from your past.
In 3, 2, 3.
Just go now.
It's really a highly flagged thread topic by the member that started this, and it's got like over 6 pages. I believe it's pronounced Guanna, G-U-A-N-N-A. And the title of this particular thread topic that he said is My 8-Year-Old Son, comma, The Criminal.
And okay, I want to pop this up. Where is it located? At what arena?
It's in the Chit Chat Forum group under okay. Rant.
under Grant.
Boy, I could really, you know, wear that one out.
This is a forum made just for you.
They ought to call it In Memory of Dave Rabbit.
There you go.
There you go. Okay, anyway, this is not a long thing, but I want to read this because I think this is the whole gist of what this guy is talking about. And, quote, "I'm so furious right now. My 8-year-old son last week at lunch recess pointed his finger at another student. The other student pointed back. Cops are called. Detention's handed out. My son gets off the bus sobbing. He is terrified that he's going to jail for a finger gun. A police report was filed against both boys. Charges will be pressed by the state, evidently. I called the police department this morning and spoke with the officer in charge. She tells me that it is just procedure under Homeland Security Act. Any hand gestures that can be considered threatening intent against another person's safety is against the law. Threatening intent, intent. Do you honestly believe my son intended to shoot this boy, ending his life? I next called the school. I asked him to drop the charges based on the fact that my son had no life-threatening intent behind the 8-year-old lunch recess play finger gun episode. The right. principal then tells me that they did not press charges, only filed a report, which is apparently mandatory under the Homeland Security Act. The principal expressed how sorry she was and that she feels it is a complete pile of crap, quote-unquote. But, of course, her hands are tied. Because the state is pressing the charges, the school cannot make them go away. My son is terrified he's going to jail. 8 years old, damn it. I will fight this until the bitter end. If I cannot protect my son from this crap, then what should I do? I'm very angry at this time. I have no money for an attorney, though I have no doubt that I can provide enough character witnesses for him to prove he had no intent on the other boy's life. Perhaps I should get together with the other boy's parents. If the two boys can agree that they were just playing, then it would get thrown out of court, right? Ben Franklin once said, they can give up essential liberties to obtain a little temporary safety, deserve neither liberty nor safety. The Homeland Security Act stands to destroy everything our nation was built on. Initial reactions, John, to that. What do you think?
Jeez. Well, that to me sounds like Homeland Security has taken it a little too far, in my opinion. I mean, that's just too much, in my opinion. That's too
well, I mean, here's the thing. I understand when you got a finger gun kind of thing, and I mean, the guy that made it famous was Charlie Bronson, you know, in his old stream of movies where he's this, right. You know, I can't remember the name offhand, the 59-year-old brain kicking in here, but, you know, where he decides to take vigilante into his own thing, and he made like a genre of the movie. It's like 3 or 4 movies. I've gone blank, and I'm sure I'll get 1,000 UTUs with what it is, but don't do that. I will find out after the fact. But, I mean, Charlie, you know, he's sitting there, the thugs are rousting up people in an airport at the very end of this first movie, and, you know, he looks at the guy, and he's got that finger gun. Well, you know, I understand to a degree that that's maybe considered a threatening gesture. But, hey, you know, back in the 60s, we used not the pointing finger, we used the middle finger to exchange our little hellos to each other. Now, what would happen if you sat there and did the middle finger salute to each other? Would the police still be called, John?
I don't know about that.
Is that considering a threatening enough gesture?
I don't know.
Well, I mean, you know, but I understand what this guy's talking about. I mean, stuff like this really chaps my butt. And I want to tell you why. Because at what point do you sit there and go, this is reality and this is way out there?
Yeah.
You know, I understand the Columbine situation. I deeply am sympathetic to all that and to the nuts that are walking around with guns and going into schools and killing innocent people. I'm totally sympathetic to that. And I am on board with doing whatever it takes to keep the innocent civilian population innocent. That said, I think it's stupid as hell to sit there and for the state, and I don't think it said what state, but whatever state it is, you know, to take action against 2 8-year-old kids that are using finger guns at each other. Christ, we used to run around the neighborhoods when I was a kiddo with, you know, with Mattel guns and stuff. And I mean, actually trying to kill each other.
I was just going to say, it's not like they were pointing toy guns or BB guns at one another.
Yeah, and I could understand it. But how can you do a finger gun and think it's life-threatening? I don't understand it, John. I really don't understand it.
Yeah. I don't either. And apparently some of the other members don't either. Kronos said, this is completely insane, but it's called zero tolerance, and they really carry it to the extreme. There is no flexibility in zero tolerance. 2 years ago, while in sixth grade, my son was pushed and hit over something stupid. He pushed and hit back because I've taught him to always defend himself, but to never be a bully or provoke a fight. Of course, I was called and had to pick him up from school to start his 5-day suspension. I spoke to the principal and told him the punishment was too harsh, as my son is a straight-A student, never before been to the principal's office, and was just defending himself. He cited the same thing that your son's principal did. He said that there was zero tolerance for fighting, and if my son hadn't have pushed or hit back, he wouldn't have been punished. Best of luck to you and your son. I would advise getting legal representation if you can afford it, of course.
And then Wild Bob 77 says, I find this hard to believe. So if it's true and I were in your shoes, I'd contact every major media source that I could and try to get it on national TV. There's no excuse for this kind of stupidity. I'd like to see a Homeland Security official on TV try and rationalize why kids pointing fingers at each other can be in any way, shape, form, or fashion be considered a physical threat.
Yeah, a couple of posts down. Layla quoted what Gwana said about the principal talking and did not press charges, only filed a report. And she says, what I find silly is that there is no common sense to this. She filed a report over pointed fingers? Who does that? What grown adult sees this and thinks it falls in line with what Homeland Security is concerned with? Her hands are tied because she filed the report when she should have just turned a blind eye? I agree. Call every news outlet you can. I know I would.
Okay, now Dark Elf has an interesting post, and it's gotten a couple of stars from the membership on it. And in fact, I think I'm just going to go ahead and click and give it another star, simply because it makes sense to me. And Dark Elf says, it's all part of the mind control that our government is forcing on our country. And what better way to have a docile community of sheepy than to start in elementary school? By the time these kids are ready for college, they won't be able to think for themselves. They will be used to a society of zero tolerance. This is the generation that will be willing to give up their guns and all their inalienable rights. That was my word, not theirs. The only thing as parents and grandparents we can do is to teach them about the truth of the world. We may all have to go underground eventually. And, you know, with that, John, I mean, we could sit here. This could be one that we could go on and on and on and on about, because it has a tremendous amount of intelligent people of the membership of AboveTopSecret.com that have come on here and expressed the things. But I just want to end this topic discussion with one that I think is pretty short and to the point. And this is by member DZ Networks. This is the very last of this. And it says, it's getting pretty bad in a society when you can't even point at someone anymore. 1984, indeed. And, you know, I guess that's really all I can say about it, John, other than the fact that it just upsets me tremendously when you stop and think about all the gestures that people give each other on a day-to-day basis.
Sure.
That 2 8-year-olds are taken out and made a subject matter of for doing something no more harmful than, you know, picking up a finger gun, basically, and going ka-ching, you know. I mean, I've seen people do that all my life, and you know, they weren't nuts or whatever.
Yeah, while I was driving earlier today, I had several people tell me that I was number one with their middle finger. and so my query would be, what will be next? Will there be a middle finger police now that will be going around to make sure that you don't do that also? Which to me, in my opinion, is much more awful than what these children were doing. Because the intent is a lot more innocent what they were doing compared to what these fine folks on the road were telling me.
Yeah, and I've had – in fact, I was number two on a lot of occasions when I was on the road. All right. Well, I guess that's all the intelligent conversation we can do on this one.
Okay.
Hi, everybody. Dave Rabbit here with the ATS Mix Show from AboveTopSecret.com. When I get ready to relax after doing a long show, I enjoy going to our sister site, BelowTopSecret.com. They have some great forums there, some of which include rants, jokes, puns, and pranks, which is one of my favorites, faith and spirituality, relationships, travel and vacations. They even have a freshman forum for you newbies and rookies. I especially enjoy the music, television, fantasy, and science fiction forums, as well as comics, music, member art, and, of course, video games. But my absolute all-time favorite is cool websites. And I want to tell you why. As everyone knows, I do not read. On cool websites, the membership at BelowTopSecret.com has done the work for me. They've researched the World Wide Web and found very interesting sites. All I got to do, go into the forum, click, and I am at an interesting and very cool website. So when you get through listening to that last ATS Mix show, come join me at BelowTopSecret.com, part of the Above Network LLC. Remember, deny boredom, BelowTopSecret.com.
And now it's time for a different view. This is the Skeptic Overview.
Once again, it's time to probe the inner workings of one of the bosses of AboveTopSecret.com. It's time for the Skeptic Overview with Bill Irvin. Hi, Bill. How are you doing today?
At my age, I don't like the word probe.
You know? Conjures up weird things, doesn't it?
Yeah, we can have some fun with that one.
Otherwise, I'm doing well. It's been, as always, it's been an interesting week in ATS. How are you guys doing?
I'm doing great. Yeah, but you're right. I mean, wow, what a roller coaster this week on the site, boss. Jeez.
Yeah, just jumping right into it, we've had an interesting week where it appeared as though, as the week started, that we actually had a member predict a worldwide UFO sighting. Oh, no. I mean, was a prediction actually came true? And it may actually turn out that maybe this member predicting the event this week had some role to play in the event actually coming to pass. One of the more popular threads, actually the most popular thread from a reply standpoint by author Solarstorm, 384 replies, lights in Phoenix again. And it wasn't just in Phoenix. There was some in Florida and I think in North Carolina in the news reports. But it's the Phoenix lights again, lights in the sky, a whole bunch of them. And a news station in Phoenix reported seeing them, people calling in. And this seemed to coincide with the prediction from the member in a thread that began in early April. Turns out, somebody admitted to filling up a bunch of helium balloons and attaching solar road flares to them. So it ended up being a complete hoax. So we may have a double hoax where someone predicted what they were about to do on in April.
When I was at the site today, in fact, on the site right now and clicking, I just noticed this new DVD that there's a trailer on talking about. Well, it's gone off my screen now. What's that newest thing, Bill, that's on the site now about that new DVD where there's a about God, the factual stuff about God not even existing? Have you seen that?
There's a thread, God does not exist. That's actually in the top 456 replies by Conspiracy Realist.
No, did I step on your toes? Sorry, I didn't scroll.
No, you didn't, because I didn't know there was a DVD.
Yeah, there's an ad up at the top, you know, in our banners up on the top of the site.
Really?
Well, yeah, when I clicked on, it's either hot. Oh, there it is. I just clicked on hot, and up at the very top it says, view trailer, the God who wasn't there. Irreverent, whatever, lays out the case that Jesus Christ never existed, quote, by Newsweek. Provocative, to put it mildly, Los Angeles Times. It's a Google ad.
And, you know, that has been a somewhat of a long-time conspiracy theory that, that Jesus was a construct of essentially freedom fighters in Israel trying to get Rome out of there. So that would be interesting to see.
Yeah, how, so actually, I clicked on it, and you can view the trailer on the thing. Of course, you know, as I say, it's a Google thing. But at first I thought it was one of the ones that were maybe coming to our DVD area.
No, I haven't seen that ad.
Wow.
I'm on that page now, and I'm seeing the UFO Hunters ad.
Yeah, but that's because they rotate, you know. Just keep refreshing.
I understand that. I'm familiar with how advertising works.
Oh, sorry.
He built the damn site.
I'm telling Bill how to refresh his page. Well, Bill, now just hit refresh. Well, listen, I tell you, if you think that's funny, you ought to hear me trying to tell Johnny about the IT stuff. Oh, God.
That's two monkeys scratching themselves, right?
Well, actually, I really did. I thought that it was I really did think it was something that was in, you know, going to be in our video area.
No, I don't think so. I haven't. We have a couple of videos on tap, but that certainly is one of them. Although that would be cool. Moving right along.
Sorry, boss.
Staying in the UFO theme, another thread by Solarstorm, our second most replied thread, entitled "Shame on You, Stephen Hawking." And a number of ATS members that want to think differently about aliens and UFOs. We're upset that Stephen Hawking essentially said, why would UFOs only appear to cranks and weirdos? So,
sorry.
No, I mean, that is a valid point, and that is the problem with ufology, is when we get right down to it, it really does, unfortunately, work out that the people reporting that they've seen UFOs or have been abducted by UFOs have at least one, usually a long list of credibility issues. And that really is a problem. And certainly Stephen Hawking's, as brilliant a guy as he is aware of it, even though he thinks that there is a lot of intelligent life in the universe.
Yeah, but don't you have to separate the abduction UFO scenario from unidentified flying objects? Because, I mean, my God, we've had presidents of the United States see UFOs, so you can't say that those guys aren't credible.
Yeah, they're related in the same way that, you know, out-of-body experiences are related to the whole paranormal phenomenon and paranormal branch of study. Whether, you know, abductions reports are certainly related to the sightings of unidentified flying objects, but that's the broader category where we certainly know that there's the possibility that some of these objects people are seeing are from other races somewhere in the galaxy.
Right.
But we also have a very strong body of evidence that shows a lot of these things that people are seeing are actually technology that our government is testing. The UFO sighting at O'Hare Airport, despite the incredible amount of people of impeccable credibility between pilots and managers of ground crews reporting this UFO, and Mark has seen the logs from the tower, control tower people seeing this UFO, and still the credibility of these people have been assailed by the FAA and a couple other government agencies as, you know, they're just seeing something. This isn't, you know, they saw some cloud formation. So it doesn't matter what your credibility is. You will be assailed by the so-called powers that be for actually seeing a UFO. That's why pilots have always been hesitant to talk about things that they see that they can't explain.
So what kind of reaction is Hawking getting with this statement that he's made? I mean, people just up in arms, ready to, you know, whack him out of his chair?
It is relatively mixed. As you read through the thread, I'd say I'm just doing this from memory. I'm sorry.
Sure,
I don't
sure, of course.
Me.
Yeah, just
it seems as though it's about two-thirds are somewhere between upset and just mildly irritated that Hawking has come out and said this. On the other hand, an entire third is saying that, you know, he has a good point, or they actually believe his point, that he doesn't think it's likely that we have been visited by aliens.
Right.
I just wanted to add real quick, Bill, that Dr. Hawking was not saying that he does not believe that aliens don't exist elsewhere off Earth. One of the things that he did point out was that if it does exist. He believes that it's more of a microbial or bacterial type life form, much smaller in size and intelligence.
He thinks that there's a lot of life in the universe. It's just unlikely that we've been visited by any of it.
Okay, so I know, but I got to say this. I mean, you know, so is he saying that every sighting by people in the military, pilots, everything over the last 40 or 50 years is imagination?
Could be, still, you know, alien extraterrestrial society, or, ooh, that could be technology that our government is testing.
Right.
I mean, the UFOs, the unidentified flying objects that we see aren't always necessarily extraterrestrial in origin. They could indeed be technology or even just something that you don't quite readily identify. That doesn't necessarily mean that it's extravagant UFOs from someplace or flying saucers from someplace else.
Right.
And, you know, I think that's a big problem with the world today, that a lot of people, as soon as they hear the word UFO, they almost immediately associate it with little green men.
Right. And it's become an acronym that means extraterrestrial origin. And that's right. Not necessarily the case. It just means there's something in the sky, it's flying, and we don't know what it is because we couldn't identify it right off the bat.
Right. And that's the term. All right. What else you got, Bill?
Well, another thread, which is very interesting and certainly timely, that covers a lot of things going on. Food rationing hitting U.S. stores, and another companion thread, which got a lot of flags right away, is, are you stockpiling now? If so, what? And stockpiling was referring to the food.
Right.
The thread by Loam, 166 replies, and it certainly does cover what's happening in the U.S. and many parts of the states here are seeing not necessarily food rationing, but a purchase limiting. Where on the West Coast and on the East Coast now, the major stores like Costco and Sam's Club are limiting the number of bags of rice and flour that purchasers can buy because there's not that many. They do have a shortage.
Right.
And because the prices of especially rice has just skyrocketed, and that is likely to be an issue because it, especially in the grains here in the U.S., when it transcends down. And this is one of the posts in that thread where a farmer replied that his feed costs have doubled in the past 3 months just to feed the chickens he has. And that'll translate into increased price for a lot of foodstuffs as it goes across the board. So this is a rather serious issue that has some complex influences on what has caused it between some weather problems and some outright crop issues, and where a lot of grains in the U.S. are being diverted to the development of ethanol rather than foodstuffs. It is a serious issue that a lot of people are dealing with. And
I was just going to say that on a personal note there, Bill, I went to Costco the other day, and the pallet for the 50-pound and 25-pound bags of rice were both empty, and a guy was coming out with a pallet jack to remove the empty pallets. And I said, do you have any more dried rice? And he goes, yeah, I'm going to pull out another. He goes, you know, this is so weird. He says, normally a pallet will last us a day and a half. He says, this is the third time today I've had to pull out a new pallet of rice.
Yeah, because people are hoarding. They're stockpiling.
Yep. And they said that they were also limiting it to only 2 bags per customer.
Okay, so Dave jumps in with his question. Is rice have a long shelf life?
Yes.
Like how?
Yeah, rice has a really long shelf life. A
couple of years or more?
It depends more on your storage. If you store rice well, it has a really long shelf life. The problem is if some microbes or insects get into the rice, you know, the bugs, then that can really shorten it. But if you store it well, it can have decades of shelf life.
Okay, so then my next question would be, so I assume that they're doing all this to prepare themselves in the event that they cannot buy food somewhere down the way, regardless of what happens in the next couple of years, where they will have an abundance of rice to where they can survive. Is that the kind of the concept or what? Or am I missing the story?
Actually, there's some concern in a lot of corners that we're headed towards some serious shortages of rice and grains within the next 6 months. Will really jack the prices up, and that's why some people are hoarding at this point.
So it's from a financial standpoint more than just afraid you're going to go hungry then.
It's a bit of both, I think.
A bit of both, yeah. In fact, you know, with the colonies of honeybees disappearing, I just listened to a documentary or a newscast the other day where 38% of the bees' colonies disappeared versus last year's of 29% of the bee colonies. And they're saying that you better enjoy your fruits and vegetables now because there's not going to be too much pollinization going on in 2009. So that includes fruits, vegetables, and your nuts.
And corn.
Now, exactly. I tell you, it's amazing how you two guys segue into something that gives me an opportunity to talk about a movie coming up. And that is, there is a M. Night Shyamalan movie that is coming out this summer.
Yeah,
I just saw the previews yesterday. The title of the movie is called The Happening. And in the trailer, they're talking about the bee population virtually being non-existent. Now, I don't know too much about where this movie is going to end up. You never know with this guy. But it appears to me that it's becoming somewhat of a world problem that it's actually the Mother Earth retaliating against sources to a degree.
It certainly is a concept that we've seen a lot on ATS.
Well, normally, M. Night Shyamalan writes his own material, which would lend me to believe that, you know, we've talked about this before, that anybody that doesn't believe that movie producers and directors and even movie stars, and we know the NSA and those boys are here. So, I mean, as many topics as we have to offer, Bill, I mean, it wouldn't surprise you, would it? That no. M. Night Shyamalan or anybody else, any other movie producer, would be on the site, see something, and go, wow, that could be a great movie. You know, I mean.
Now, here is a wow topic. There's one more thread I want to cover, and it covers sort of a bit of what we talked about last week. Is one of my all-time – what is my all-time favorite thread?
And yeah, somebody asked last week what it was.
Right,
yeah.
And I said I'd come back this week, and I was doing some search, but then – literally, that thread started this week. And I have to say that we have a thread that began on, what's the date of this thread? On the 21st of April, that is as hardcore with backup as it can possibly get on ATS. We've seen this thread take off in popularity. It's been linked to on a number of different sites. We're seeing links to it on some pretty good mainstream news sites, but still, this topic has not yet been covered in mainstream news, and it appears as though it's a very interesting and serious burning issue that broke right here on Above Top Secret. It was authored by Mr. Old School, and the thread is titled, FBI Fears Chinese Hackers and or Government Agents Have a Backdoor into U.S. Government and Military Computer Networks.
Right, I saw that one.
Wow. Now that's with the Cisco router systems, isn't it?
Yes, this thread, in a matter of hours, got more than 100 flags and 72 digs on dig.com, and then ended up being a headline on Slashdot the next morning. What has happened here is this Mr. Old School found an actual FBI PowerPoint presentation and posted each slide to the thread that outlines the FBI's concerns and investigation into counterfeit Cisco router equipment that has been manufactured in China. And if you follow the story, there's just so much in the thread and in the follow-up and in the links that he provided. A lot of this counterfeit computer hardware has the backing of the Chinese government. Two of the links he posted outline that concern. And the FBI, in this PowerPoint presentation, is very concerned that we have essentially compromised hardware deep within our government. I mean, this hardware has been purchased by several agencies, including the military and intelligence and the State Department, that could be exploited by the Chinese government for months, maybe even more than a year. They could have had backdoor access to, you know, the most secure computer systems in the country. And that's outlined in the FBI presentation. There's even the names of the agents involved. It's just an incredible piece of research that's right here on ATS. And it's just, I mean, it scares you beyond belief that oh, yeah, really could be the case. And if the FBI is concerned about it,
that's a way of telling you that we may be up a creek without a paddle somewhere down the way.
Exactly. This investigation has been going on for a long time. And what this presentation outlines is essentially early this year, the FBI giving to someone, it's not sure who, a summary of the results of their investigation and what they intend to do next. And the IT people that replied to this on Slashdot were essentially saying that you know, game over if this really is the case, that government has had an influence in hardware that sits into secure systems in our government. If you know anything about Slashdot, you know that internet professionals and security professionals, that's pretty much who populate that site.
Right.
And if they're saying something like, if this is the case, if hardware from China is in secure systems in the U.S. government, then it's game over. They know everything.
Right.
And that's a pretty scary thought. The thing that surprises me is while this thread has gotten a lot of attention, a lot of traffic, we're seeing a lot of people reading this thread, it still has not reached mainstream news, which makes us wonder if there's a reason to make sure this doesn't get into the mainstream news.
Well, I think it would create a panic for one thing. Don't you think people would really get paranoid if they really believed that the Chinese were sitting there? We threw them the keys to the car. I mean, my God, you know.
This is almost like shades of remember the Russian embassy that was built that turned out to have all the spying, right, eavesdropping devices that were inside.
Yeah. And they made a movie about that, as a matter of fact.
Right. So this is really one of the better threads that I've seen in ATS that has that real information. I mean, the FBI presentation is about as real as you can get. There isn't quite the conspiracy angle in the actual information that's put forward, but the fact that this has been out there for a little bit and finally this guy had to dig and bring it out, it's not being reported by mainstream news, it starts to bring out those conspiracy angles and make you wonder why the public doesn't know that what's happening is government contractors, approved government contractors, bought this hardware on eBay, which is against the law according to their contract,
right,
and then installed that in their projects with the U.S. government is just incredible. I mean, the criminal investigation and then the resulting investigation, the potential counter-espionage is just amazing.
Wow.
And it has appeared nowhere in mainstream media.
Mm. Well, now for your favorite time of the show, Bill. It's Ask the Skeptic Overlord, the Skeptic Overview. And if you would like to ask the Skeptic Overlord a question for his show, his weekly show that he does here on the ATS Mix, please go to the information area at the ATS Mix site on the board home of AboveTopSecret.com and find the thread that is entitled Ask the Skeptic Overlord or the Skeptic Overview. And we're now on the bottom of page 3. We're going to knock out those last two and then a few on page 4, Bill, before we let you go today. And I'll start the thing with Althea 041724. Skeptic Overlord, with all the latest whisperings, and you're going to have to tell me what this is, regarding TPTB. What is that, Bill?
I have no idea.
Anybody know? With all the latest whisperings regarding TPTB wanting to control our internet, what, if any, protocols, security features, or the like is ATS currently looking at to support our right to continue to assemble here and speak freely without the fear of the white or black vans pulling up in front of our houses, because we just might be getting close to the truth about a particular CT. Now,
you know, I believe that's the powers to be.
The powers to be. Thank you.
The powers to be.
What's CT mean?
Conspiracy theory.
Okay. All right. Then it says BTW, which I know what that means. By the way, thank you for providing all of us an oasis from ignorance. Long may we all post. So what's your thoughts on that?
Well, I think our number one defense against that is our popularity. The more people that come to ATS every month, the more people that participate, the critical mass of participation and our popularity begins to create a natural defense, where if ATS were to be shut down, the uproar would be unmanageable. So that is the
strength in numbers, I believe they say.
Exactly.
I think Agent X just broke into somebody's car. I heard an alarm going off there just briefly.
Yeah, he's trying to do undercover, John.
It's freelance.
Zarni Whoop.
Zarni Whoop.
Zarni Whoop.
Zarni.
How do you say that?
Whoop. I think it's Whoop.
Is it Zarni Whoop?
I'm going to open up a can of Zarni Whoop on you, boy.
All right. Well, he says, or she says, until recently you and the other amigos were somewhat shrouded in mystery in regards to your true identity and or appearance, as are the large majority of the ATS membership. And the question is, were you at all apprehensive about revealing your identities to a large audience? And if so, what impacts has this changed on your personal and professional lives?
Initially apprehensive, yes. Change? None. Really? I guess my apprehension was misguided. I think I was sort of hesitant to really do the full reveal until this was my full-time responsibility. Certainly, you know, you never know how your employer might react to you having a high-profile hobby like this. But other than that, there's really been no change.
Yeah, but when you're self-employed like the three of you guys are, pretty much, the only downside would be, you know, I don't know.
Having to talk to us on Sunday.
That really is.
Such a smart ass. All right, I'm going to show you how much I think of that. I'm going to page 4. We're at the top of page 4, ladies and gentlemen. Siri Oracle. Now, this is an interesting question, Bill. I know the answer to this, but he wants your answer. Mm-hmm. Bill, do you live off-grid in any way with regard to your heating, cooling, light, or transportation? And do you grow your own food, hunt, raise your own livestock, or collect rainwater?
Well, I actually, you know, the answer isn't as humorous as you might think.
I know, because there's a lot of people that do live off-grid, you know.
Clearly, there's no way I could be off-grid. However, we only have one car, and actually for a good portion of my professional life, I did not drive a car to work. I was either able to ride a bicycle or take public transportation.
Wait a minute. You rode a bicycle?
I was a competitive cyclist for quite some time.
Were you really?
Really?
Yes. And that was that.
Did you do those tournaments and those triathlons or whatever the things are, where you ride your bike and you shoot a rabbit? And event. Sorry.
No, actually, I did do a few triathlons.
Did you really?
Yes.
I'm not saying this to be a smartass, but I find that blows me away, Bill. I didn't realize that you had a passion for that kind of stuff.
Well, I still do some exercise now, but I'd say 12 years ago, I was really into it. I had a rather pricey bike, and I was on a team. I had a sponsor. I had I got a lot of free gear. That's in the local clubs. That's the only reason to be on a team, is you get some free crap
from
the local bike store. I was in almost weekly races, and then some triathlons. It was a lot of fun. Great way to put you in incredible shape. I would take the long way to work and then the long way home. I would average 60 to 80 miles a day on the bicycle.
Wow. That's incredible, Bill.
Yes. Congrats, Bill. I mean, really, yeah. I'm blown away, man. I really am.
Well, that was then. That's not now.
Yeah, you've gone from riding a bike to riding a lawnmower.
A swivel chair.
Well, you know, actually, they made the movie After Your Life. In fact, it was called That Was Then, This Is Now. Sorry. Okay, two more. John?
All right. Pale Horse 23 says, hey, Bill, has anyone ever tried to have a above top secret convention or a similar like event?
Yeah, we've mentioned this, and no, there's been a couple of get-togethers, but we are working on having some type of above-top-secret branded, named, themed conference in the near future, and that certainly is in the works.
All right, the last one, and this is a fine way to end this particular segment. This is from Cosmic Jack. Skeptic, why does ATS allow threads like Higher Light by Mingard, and I'm Coming Clean by Sleeper, as well as others, Flash Stormic, that foster a sort of cult personality? Threads like these seem to attract the most new members. Is that why they are allowed to continue with no real proof? If so, that seems sort of exploitive, given the many emotional, personal, and spiritual questions asked of these thread authors. I personally think it's wrong and does nothing to deny ignorance. So I guess they're wanting your response to that, Bill.
Actually, in the scheme of things, and we have spent some time looking at what some of our members complain about as the topics like this that seem to be way out there in as far as how they attract new members. And it's a drop in the bucket. We have more than 1 million visits a month from search engines, from people doing searches, and really less than 2% are to threads that are like this that people would complain about. In fact, less than 1% were to the John Lear topics that everyone thought for a time were really popular and bringing a lot of traffic to ATS. And that's just not the case. It's just such a broad range of topics that people find in ATS that any one really isn't a leader. But in the case with issues like this, it's tough. I mean, we've taken a very clear stance almost 3 years ago that the management of the site will do our best to not take any editorial influence in what's on the website.
Right.
And we want to encourage people to come to their own conclusions and have their own conversations of this nature. Certainly when we discover something is a hoax or just so far out there it has no credibility at all, we'll label the title of the thread appropriately. But still, I mean, it's not up to us, the owners, to determine where threads like this should be as long as they fall within the rules of decorum and civility in our terms and conditions. It's up to the members to come to their own decisions. If you see a thread started that you think is just complete crap, don't reply to it.
Right.
I mean, it really is that simple. We want to make sure that the people who come to ATS and that the people who participate in ATS have the power to determine what are the important topics. And for the most part, when you look at the hot page and the top page and the home page of the site, it's working out great. And certainly, yeah, there's some threads that people have issues with that do seem to foster a cult of personality in a couple of cases. But for as popular as those threads are, they really, really are in the extreme minority when you look at the totality of all the stuff that's on ATS.
All right. Well, to end the show, I've just got one last thing to say. And you're always behind the scenes, Bill, doing all kinds of marvelous things. You know, I just noticed something. John, are you live on air or did you copy your deal?
No, I'm here. In fact, I was just going to make a mention myself before.
On the right-hand side, have you ever seen that before?
Are you talking about with all the other areas that you can go to now on the right-hand side?
Yeah. Bill, when did you do that? I just looked over to the right. I'm going recent. You know, of course, obviously we're moderators or administrators, so I guess some of these only show up to us. But I just saw the new threads on the right-hand side of your thing, active new thread.
That started Thursday. It was off. If you log out and view the site as a non-member, we've completely revamped the way topics look to non-members to have a more, web 2.0 feel to it, so that they're a little more easy readability, a little more updated as far as how the layout is. And we've included sort of links to the top and most popular threads to the right. And it's just a members-only version, I guess, of that same idea.
Oh, okay. Okay, so when you log out, you see what the Joe Blow sees. And
right.
then that way, when they first come, then it becomes more an easier site to. Yeah, and boy, I tell you, kudos from probably thousands and thousands and thousands of people, Bill, that said they lurked for years before they ever became a member. Because I remember how intimidated I was when I first came to the site. This is really cool. This is probably one of the best things I've ever seen you create, Bill. Kudos.
Well, thank you. I mean, it helps everyone stay on top of what's happening.
And I know it's a buttload of work, too. So yeah. Johnny and I really appreciate it, especially since you have our shows on the site, Bill. You know, one thing about our shows, we're not too proud to promote the crap out of them.
Oh,
all right, Bill. Well, listen, you, marvelous show. You really touched on some really heavy things. I think we really got some really good conversation debate going on a couple of them. And we can't thank you enough for your Sundays with Dave and Johnny.
It's always just such a pleasure.
You know, we never know whether or not to believe you. Or not, you know, when you say stuff like that.
Yeah, now Susie hangs up, he's going to go over and beat the crap out of his Dave and Johnny.
You know, I'm sure he's got a bottle of bourbon right beside him, and he goes, "Thank God that's over with."
Are you kidding me? It's like one of those drip things from the hospital.
An IV drip of bourbon?
IV drip.
It's got to be constant.
To take Mark's quote, it's 5 o'clock somewhere. All right, Bill, thanks so much for your time this week.
All right, take it easy.
All right, great job.
Take care, Bill.
All right, bye.
ATS Mix featured interview.
Well, it's time again for us to interview one of our many multitude of friends and associates in the UFO community, and today is going to be no different. Before we get right to it, Dave, I just got to ask, have you heard of anything exciting happening in the skies lately around Dallas?
Not around Dallas, but I tell you, I'm just amazed at all the stuff that's going on up. What is it, Phoenix, that the four lights are up?
Oh, is that right? Well, maybe our guest will be able to clue us in a little bit more, because I've been hunkering into the production department, and I am clueless at this time. So maybe even our guest will be able to share a little bit about that. So if you're ready, let me go ahead and introduce who our guest is. His name is Frank Warren. He's been a student of ufology since the early 70s. Curious in nature, Frank began his trek in part by stumbling across some of Donald Kehoe's work, as well as the book The Report on Unidentified Flying Objects. Frank's interests encompass everything UFO and has a particular passion for events of historic nature. He's dedicated a lot of time in cases such as the Maury Island, the Battle of Los Angeles, and, of course, Roswell. Frank has had a long-time career as being a critic of mainstream media in regards to how they handle the subject of UFOs. His analysis of the UFO phenomenon, and its social effects on the Earth is going to be the premise of a lecture at a symposium later on this year. Frank's website is, of course, located at www.frankwarren.blogspot.com. He's not only a favored member in the UFO community, but he's also a favored member here at AboveTopSecret.com. And it's a great honor for us to have him with us today. So if you will, please welcome Frank Warren. Hi, Frank.
Hi, guys. How are you?
Great.
Well, we're doing good, Frank. Thanks for so much for joining Johnny and I. I mean, you know, we've really been on the holy grail these last 30 or 40 shows. And I mean, everybody from Stan Freeman to Graham Hancock and, you know, a lot of colleagues that I'm sure you're very familiar with. And it has the same feel that you do. You know, what I find amazing, and this is not a question, but I want to tell you what I find amazing, is that you guys all in the UFO community, or ufologist, if you will, you guys have, to me, more passion about what you are researching and investigating than people in some other areas. And I'm just wondering, Frank, is there a reason why ufologists have such the passion that they do, as opposed to, for instance, archaeology or something like that?
Well, actually, I think that could be said for all different fields. I mean, people have their own passions and whatnot. I mean, for me, it certainly is addictive. Obviously, it is for Stan Friedman. He's the Energizer Bunny of ufology.
Yeah.
He just keeps going. In fact, I've got, aside from that, I call him the Godfather, and he's a personal hero of mine. But, you know, you get caught up in these things, and you know, certainly you gain a passion. Different categories and things and whatnot, but I got caught up in it early on. I was curious, curious by nature, and as I dug into this thing, and of course I was a skeptic, you know, all of us are in what I call programmed by society and our upbringing, and we begin this trek with conventional walls, and consequently when I began looking into this subject, I didn't believe it. I questioned things.
Right.
And as I dug further into it, it led to more questions, and you get that passion. And you get an education as you go along. And pretty soon you have this burning fire, and you want to know more.
Let me interrupt you just real quickly here, Frank. Speaking of this burning fire, which we hope just isn't gas, when did the burning fire start for you, sir? What age were you when you first started getting interested in ufology?
Well, I got into it preteen and as a teen back in the 60s. I picked up some books, Kehoe early on, Repelt's book, if I pronounce his name properly, that was one that I had read early on, and I couldn't get around the fact that if there wasn't anything to it, you know, back in those days, you have the same groups today, the naysayers and whatnot. But I couldn't get past the idea that the military had investigated this thing for 20 years, and then on the same token, there was nothing to it. Didn't make sense to me.
Right.
It still can't be explained today. Obviously, the government and the military, they do a lot of stupid things, but I don't think they would look into something for 20 years if there wasn't anything to it. And of course, that was early on, and then I've done decades of research, and I know better. But that's what got me hooked, I think, in the very beginning.
I can just add a little sidebar question here. Were you brought up religiously?
No, not so much per se. In fact, I would have to say that my mother instilled a sense of curiosity within me. She was a very curious and still is a curious person. She's still with us. She kind of broke the barrier of conventional thinking. She thought outside the box.
Right.
And she instilled that in me. And I was inquisitive as a young man, still am. I got caught up in ufology early on and haven't looked back.
The only reason why I asked is because I find it kind of interesting on the background of some of the people that we interview as to how ufology sits amongst their religious beliefs. Because I would think that at some point in time, with many of them, that there would be a conflict of interest.
That's come up often, and I think ufology can fit within anybody's religion. If you believe in a creator, and if you believe in your God, and I do believe in God, which may be a little bit different than the way that most people would think, but I don't think, I think it's all-encompassing. If you adhere to ETH in terms of the extraterrestrial theory, if God created us, then God can create them.
Right.
I don't think it doesn't have to conflict with religion in my mind. Although some people may argue that point, but I don't feel that.
Yeah, they're in that long line standing over there. All right, here's my question, Frank. I mean, I was born in 1948, so I'm 59 years old. So, growing up as a kiddo for me in the 50s, I mean, there was a deluge, if you will, of UFO movies and all these other things that were coming out. I mean, The Day the Earth Stood Still, Invasion of the Flying Saucers. I mean,
we have the chicken and the egg scenario.
Yeah, you can go on and on and on. But I'm just curious, in all the research that you've done, what, in your opinion, have been the more significant reports or sightings of that era? And maybe give me a reason why you think that.
Well, actually, you can go further back than that. One of my pet cases is the Battle of Los Angeles. Here we have a UFO sighted by tens of thousands of people. We fired on this object for a couple, 2 to 3 hours, with 3-inch anti-aircraft rounds. We have photographic evidence of this thing being hit directly. And based on my research, the object was over 800 feet in width, silver in color, elliptical in shape. So the questions are, what in 1942 was that large, silver in color, elliptical in shape, and could withstand 3-inch anti-aircraft rounds?
Yeah.
The answer in terms of something man-made is nothing. There's nothing that was built then, or for that matter today, that can withstand 3 hours of bombardment with 3-inch anti-aircraft rounds. So what was it? By definition, obviously it was a UFO, and when I use the term UFO, I use it in the verbatim. I don't apply any extra definition to it, unless there's evidence to suggest something. But that was one of the biggest cases early on, and it's often overlooked. It's claimed that modern-day ufology started with Kenneth Arnold's sighting. But the 1942 case would say otherwise, in my mind.
Well, I was just going to say, one of the things that I enjoy about the Battle of L.A., if one can use that frame of mind, enjoying the Battle of L.A., is that it did seem to get quite a bit of attention.
At the time, no. It was quickly put to sleep.
Yeah.
In fact, they quite frankly, they lied about it initially. Our research and a group of researchers that I often work in concert with, we've interviewed eyewitnesses. We had planes in the air against this thing, and it's common sense that we would. We're just months after Pearl Harbor. Anything that would be, we're thinking this is an invasion at this point. So certainly there would be planes in the air. We don't want another duplication of Pearl Harbor. We would be derelict in duty if we didn't have planes in the air. And many, many people cited planes. You can go back into the newspaper reports, you'll see that. You can go back into some of the declassified documents, you'll see that. They muddied the waters early on, and in part, probably some of that was needed. You know, we had the Office of Censorship that came into play early on in the beginning of the war, and certainly during wartime, a lot of that's needed. They covered up, how bad Pearl Harbor was initially, and that went on all throughout the war until its very end in 1945. But we still haven't got the straight dope to this day as to what went on.
Speaking of things that seem to be going through the higher-ups' hands, there was just recently a notice released out into the UFO community about a so-called UN meeting on extraterrestrials, and I'm very, very interested to find out what your slant and take on that might be.
Well, anytime something like that comes out, you have to you take it with a grain of salt, and I've got my fingers in the pie, so to speak, and I would assume that if something significant happened, that in a relative short period of time, things that the source was named, and then later, obviously, you have to vet that witness, and then the crumble around. At this point.
It kind of aggravates me. You know what? I unlike you and Johnny, I'm a novice when it comes into ufology. But it really aggravates the crud out of me when somebody comes in and says, well, I saw this or I saw that. And, above topsecret.com, we're constantly debugging hoax. I just noticed there was one today where a guy comes in and posts on the site and claims that he's a extraterrestrial.
Brother Ishtar.
Ishtar, yeah. Yeah, and he's sitting there. And this nut is sitting there carrying on the conversation, Frank, as if he is an extraterrestrial. And, he's all very nicey and nicey words and, we're all one brother and all this stuff. But doesn't it drive you crazy? I know this is a sidebar, John, but doesn't that drive you crazy, Frank, that we get nuts that come in there and just disrupt the entire plane of thought?
Well, it certainly does, but in ufology, given the subject matter, you're always separating the wheat from the chaff. Personally, and I repeat this a lot to friends and associates, given the subject matter and giving what some of our opinions are, personally for me, based on my own research, I do believe that a small portion of UFO sightings can be attributed to extraterrestrials. I believe that with my heart and soul, and quite frankly, I think the preponderance of evidence shows that. Now, that said, if you're willing, there's a level of acceptance there. If you're willing to go that far, then the question becomes, what is crazy? So when you get these guys...
I have a list of things I could probably help you with. Go ahead, Frank.
Now, I'm a skeptic at nature, and a lot of people may laugh at that, but I really am, and I found that, not too long ago, I was asked to try to find a good skeptic to take part in a symposium. And I tried to find one, and I thought, there really aren't that many good skeptics. There are debunkers, they're closed-minded debunkers, but it's rare to find a good skeptic. I did eventually find a fellow in England that I thought was pretty much in a neutral position, that he was very skeptical, but he just didn't debunk everything that comes down the pike, like your McGahey's, for example.
Right.
But to get back to the center line again, we're dealing with this subject that goes beyond conventional thinking. So again, you have to vet. If a witness comes up, it's back to Sagan's famous line. You know, extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence.
Exactly.
Sometimes I ask myself, what's extraordinary? I mean, if you go back with ufology, it's something that's been with us throughout our history in reality. So how extraordinary is it that it's almost a common day thing? You know what I mean? But if you stay with that, then you have to vet witnesses. You have to sift through data, you know, and you have to look at everything, take everything with a grain of salt. And there are certainly a lot of kooks out there that take advantage of situations.
Yeah, they actually ended up giving two of those kooks a radio program.
Yeah. Well, what are those guys named? Dave and what?
Johnny.
What planet are they from?
Oh, Dave and
right.
Johnny.
We're cousins of Brother Ishtar.
Well, you know,
distant cousins.
This particular situation that you're offering is a little more lighthearted, but some of it can cause damage. For example, like the Great Lakes Dive Company snafu that happened about a year or so ago. I don't know if you guys remember that.
I'm not familiar with that. What was that, Frank?
Well, a guy came up out of the blue and he claimed that he had sonar photographs of the plane that was lost in '53, pertaining to the Kinross.
Oh, okay.
And this was just and two pilots lost their lives on that, and the bodies were never found, the wreckage was never found. You've got families involved, you've got military equipment involved, etc. And this guy concocted this this hoax on this, and you know, sadly, early on, this thing looked real, and you can only imagine how the family members felt at this point.
Sure, oh, of course, yeah.
And you know, and then as the walls started coming in on this guy, he folded up shop and then disappeared into the woodwork. But, you know, that's a guy you'd like to get a hold of.
Yeah, with a 2x4.
Yeah,
and you know what? The sad thing about a lot of these is that in some parts of the community where they're not as well informed, the myth, the hoax, the whole conjecture continues on and becomes almost
sure.
Another byline.
Yes. No, you're absolutely right. And oftentimes, I've had a conversation with Angela Joyner in regards to Stephenville lately. I said, look, you're getting a lot of attention. And I noticed that she had... And she and I have become pretty good friends, and I think we correspond often during the course of the week, and along with Steve Allen. But one thing that I had noticed that she was saying, she was injecting the verb believe or the noun believers in regards to ufology. And
right.
I often point out to people, and even ufologists do this. I go, look, the term UFO was born by the Air Force. There's no debate about it. It's a fact of life. It's in the dictionary. There is a debate about the origin of a UFO, but there's no debate about UFOs. And let's don't change the meaning. UFO doesn't mean alien spaceship. It means that it's an unidentified flying object. And I always try to tell people, you know, distinguish between the two. And I mentioned that to Angela. I said, look, you know, you're getting a lot of airtime. You're getting your 15 minutes right now because you're in the middle of this thing. And if you would, please, you know, distinguish that point. Told James Fox the same thing before he went on with Larry King when he got into debate with Michael Shermer, talk about debunkers, and he did in fact make that clarification with Shermer, and it gave Shermer no place to go because in essence he was agreeing with Shermer. You know, it takes two people to make an argument, and he said, look, we're talking about UFOs, we're not talking about aliens, and you do agree with that, Michael, right? You do agree that there are valid UFO sightings. And, of course, he had to say yes to that. So the argument went away. You, in regards to the layperson or the public, you have to take baby steps with them. You have to re-educate the public all the time because they forget. UFO doesn't mean alien craft. You got to go A, B, C, D,
right,
as far as I'm concerned.
And, you know, I absolutely agree with you 100%. There has been too many people that do tend to associate the word, the acronym, UFO, to mean that there must be some aliens involved. And I wish...
Drives me crazy.
It, me too. I wish we could get away with that. You briefly brought up you talking about speaking with Angela Joyner about the Stephenville incident. My next question that I was going to ask you was what currently has kind of garnered your interest that you're keeping your eye on, and I'm sure this is one of those incidents. And if there's any others, feel free to fill us in now because you're the man in the know.
Well, you know, that's a big case in my eyes. I had the opportunity to interview Steve Allen early on, and I spent a couple, 2 or 3 hours on the phone with him, and he and I become friends since then. He's just a great, fantastic guy. I lived in Texas back in the 70s for about 4 years.
Where?
Can't say, East Texas, Palestine in particular.
Oh, of course, of course. Yeah. Did all the girls have sand between their toes down there?
Yes.
How'd
you know?
Don't you? Sorry, only a Texas boy would understand the humor of that.
Well, speaking of this Texas boy, the guy is a gentleman and a scholar, and I just really enjoyed talking with him. But I tell you what, the hair on my arms was standing up when he described what he witnessed that day. And this is a big, big event that happened. And it just, throughout the anecdote, as he relived this with me, I was right there with him. And I can't say enough about what he witnessed. And sadly, he witnessed a large craft a la the Phoenix Lights. And then some of the stories that have come out have kind of gotten away from that. And I think what he witnessed in particular is very, very significant. In addition to that, on the way back, he sees this big craft fly over him and two buddies that he's with, go to Stephenville, kind of blink out. They go back in the house. The third fellow that's with him is so shook up, he goes home. They go back in the house to tell his buddy's wife what happened. While they're discussing this thing, and the wife is looking at him like they've grown another head, wondering how many beers they had at the fire or whatever. The phone rings. It's the third guy. I don't recall his name right off the cuff. He says, "The thing's coming back. Get outside." They all rush outside. Here the object is coming back in the direction that it came from, which, by the way, was very close to the direction going back towards the Bush presidential ranch. And he says, "In pursuit are two F-16s. And to quote him, he said it was as if this object was just toying with these F-16s. If the F-16s increased speed, it would increase speed. It just paced them. It kept the same distance between them, and they watched it until it was out of sight. He said the next day, he said if you flew a kite, you'd hit some type of military aircraft. There were F-16s. Everything was in the air the next day, as if there was some sort of search going on. Now, bear in mind, in a post 9/11 world that we're in, NORAD pays a lot more attention to our inner space than it did before. And then, of course, now that we have all these new agencies in regards to 9/11, one in particular watches everything that flies in our airspace in a couple hundred miles off each coast. So anything pervious to radar that stands out, they're going to be paying attention to. And then the other thing that most people forget is the close proximity that particular object and the incident was to the Bush Ranch. Don Ledger wrote a neat little article on that, which we published on the Knowledge of Fires website. But that's a big thing. Now, if you read between the lines and you dig into the cracks, ironically, there have been similar instances of either crafts and or orbs and jet activity or jet pursuit planes. It happened in San Diego. We've got word on it on the East Coast. Now we just, a few days ago or last week, we had the Kokomo incident, something similar in Argentina. Today we have, last night, we have another orb sighting over Phoenix in the valley there. That's just been going nuts all day. Something similar in Florida, and then we've got reports coming in from Germany, Spain, all very similar reports. This is really getting exciting.
Well, since you brought it up, let me just ask you real quickly here, for a lot of our members that may not know what happened here. The other day, something kind of significant happened there in Arizona again. Why don't you share and fill in the gaps for everybody?
Well, actually, it was a matter of hours. That was last night, approximately 8 o'clock. There were at least 4 orbs witnessed and videotaped, and we've got most of the stories on the Knowledge is Power website. I know there's a live thread on ATS as we speak. with some eyewitnesses, I believe, that were involved, have made posts there as well. Four orbs apparently making various patterns and formations in the sky. In watching the video myself, obviously you're going to get a triangle out of it if you have three or more orbs. But there was a triangle, there seemed to be a chevron shape, and these things are moving, changing shapes, and making shapes. In terms of a debate, some people have thrown up the idea that quite possibly that they were the all the wedding candles that you see.
Yeah, the Chinese lanterns, I think.
Chinese lanterns, yeah. And that kind of thing. Mm. Well, the question to that, I can see getting a triangle pattern, obviously, that's going to happen. but these things spread out, they came back together, they made a pattern. I think that cancels out the Chinese lantern theory. The obvious one to throw in, of course, is the flares, that the military flares that they always come up with.
Right.
But again, we've got these patterns. They come in, they go out. You can't buy the flare theory either. And, of course, at present time, the military has denied everything. The local Air Force base was contacted. In fact, all the airports were contacted and whatnot. And so far, the official explanation, they denied any planes being involved or helicopters and that kind of thing. So here we have a big question mark again. In point of fact, and using the term again in the verbatim, as I always do, it was a legitimate UFO sighting last night. And coincidentally, 11 years and a few weeks past the original Phoenix Lights sighting. You can bet your bottom dollar there's going to be several people outside tonight with cameras.
Oh, yeah, and it won't be long until probably somebody will have something like that up on YouTube.
They already do.
Hey, Frank, we're going to have to pause here and close out our interview with you, but can we get you to join us next week? We'd love to have you back.
You betcha.
And we're going to ask everybody to join us next week for part two of our interview with Frank Warren.
He's mad as hell, and here's why. Who's ready for a rant? ATS Mix presents The Rabbit's Rant. In other words, what the hell is ruffling Dave Rabbit's fur this time?
Relax and enjoy yourself.
This is The Rabbit's Rant.
And once again, it's the end of our ATS Mix episode, which means it's time for The Rabbit's Rant. Please keep all your fingers away from the cage. Hello, Dave.
Hello. How are you? not much. We've put up several sound offs, and I decided, I don't really have anything to rant about. I could probably find millions of them because I'm so mad about everything that's happened this week. But I decided that, this Rabbit's Rant, I want to go ahead and do the rant about that beer is now cheaper than gas. And initially, we only wanted audio, and I believe you're going to favor us with some of the audio later.
Right.
But I want to read some of the comments that were put up on the thread. We've got 46 flags and over 3,500 views, John, on this thing.
Wow.
So obviously, it's a pretty hot topic. Spoon Toad is an example. Said, yeah, it's true. Beer is cheaper than fuel now in terms of weight and measurements, but that is changing as grain prices are starting to rise now at the start of the farming season. Everything except wages are going up. My $17.50 an hour, which I have been at for 5 years, is more like $12.50 an hour today due to rising daycare costs, food costs, cost of living, etc. So, he's basically on board with the thing.
This is the ATS member Lanrick, and beer is cheaper than gas here in Massachusetts, yes.
I love Bocats 001 response. He says, where can I buy a conversion kit to start running my truck on beer? And then a space cadet comes right after that and says, so I guess this means that we will get all of our protein from beer when we can't afford gas. Our jobs are gone and there is no money to buy gas for our cars. We will just sit down and all get drunk. Yeah, I kind of like that mentality too.
Yeah, you can't drink beer and drive drunk anyway, can you? So just drink beer and don't drive at all. Stay drunk.
And then I'm going to jump down to Chilled Voodoo. I loved your avatar, by the way, Chilled. For me, beer can be cheaper than gas for a long time. I don't know what the big deal is. Did I mention I drink Pabst Blue Ribbon? So those that really love the libations of beer, I guess, really. And then Alaho has, or Alahi, I guess. I was just learning how to make my own beer at home, and now malt prices are going through the roof. my new hobby, trash those. And then he has a couple of stars eliminating a word that was getting banned from the DNC. Sure. Desert Dog doesn't seem to compute for me. Here in Northwest Arizona, 87 octane gas is running at 328 to 360 per gallon. A recent purchase of quart bottle of mid-priced beer is $1.59. 4 quarts makes a gallon. 4 times $1.59 is $6.36. Color me confused. Now, and we really appreciate everybody putting their responses in the thing. And, John, I got to tell you something. I saw an article, and I don't know if you have been made aware of it. There is a metering device on these gas pumps. I don't know. And you know what I'm talking about, right?
We'll continue on, and I'll tell you.
Okay. Well, the way the metering device works on the individual gas pumps is when you pull the lever,
right,
to disperse gas,
right,
that metering device, if working properly, is not supposed to start metering, you know, showing how much money you owe for what's being dispersed until that liquid passes that nozzle,
right?
Okay, because that's just how. And weights, the Department of Weights and Measures has that.
Right,
I saw a thing on AP, the news division AP, that said that there were significant problems with metering devices because of their age, and that they had done independent tests, and that in several of the tests, it was clicking off up to 6 or 7 cents before any gas was delivered.
Oh, okay, now I know what you're talking about. As a matter of fact, I am one of those that has seen this happen. I had a place that I go down the street to pick up my gas. I make it a point not to actually hit the or pull the handle to get my gas until I actually see what the metering or the delivery thing, and it will roll over about 1.5 to 2 cents each time.
Right.
Before I've ever delivered any gas. Yeah,
and so what's happening basically is they're getting millions of dollars free, you know, and that we're paying for it simply because these stupid metering devices don't work properly.
Right.
And I am surprised, John, that people are not just up in arms about this particular thing. It just drives me crazy. But I'll tell you what makes me even madder than that.
Okay.
The fact that we cannot find a vehicle that we can use to where we could, at a prearranged time, John, have members call in, not our 800 number or 877 number, and not, you know, where we call them up on Skype with when they give us a phone number, but some way where we could do a live conference or a live segment with members. You know, that's what just angers me, that, you know, surely with the technology that we have in the world, John, that there's got to be some way that we could figure out to where we could sit there and announce on the ATS Mix site and ATS site that, you know, at such and such a time, on such and such a day, call this number. I assume it would be an 800 number that anybody could call, or whoever, or however they connect through the internet. And we could talk to them live on air as if we are in a mainstream media atmosphere, but it wouldn't cost them anything to talk to us. You think there's a way to do that? You think there's a way to do that?
I'll tell you what, I'll check into that, because you know me, being kind of a techno geek, I can probably ask some of my gurus and be able to see if we can find an avenue, a tool, if you will, to see if we can. And by the way, I'm not calling anybody a tool. to see if we can do that, and then that'd be actually kind of cool. And then what would we do? We allow anybody to call in and then just talk about anything they want?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what technology is out there, but I'm sure there's got to be something where people could call in, and there would be some way where we could, I don't know, control who we're talking to at a time, or maybe it's just a gang fest. I don't know how the thing works. You know, all of a sudden there's 17 of us talking, and all of a sudden 30 more people pile on the bus. You know, boy, would that be fun? You know, everybody be going hi. You know, and everybody starts introducing themselves again, and we've already been introduced. You know,
right?
I don't know. It may be chaotic as hell, but you know, if anybody can find out, folks, the Johninator can. So. Anyway, so I guess that's my rant. Beer is cheaper than gas. Nobody seems to care, especially those that enjoy beer. And the world's going nuts anyway. So, good show.
I'll tell you what. If if there are some people out there that are listening to this podcast right now, and you think that that sounds like something that would interest you to be able to call in and talk to Dave and Johnny about anything, drop us a note on the thread of this show and let us know that you'd be interested in that. So,
or you to you, us or email us. You have all our addresses.
Sure.
You know, by the way, everybody keeps saying, well, what are your email addresses? Well, if you look at Johnny's and my avatar, right below our picture, it has our email address. So if you feel more comfortable, and I know how paranoid all of you are, but if you can email us at our email address, you can U2U us, or as Johnny says, you can post it on this particular show thread, which is show number 78. So everybody, I hope everybody had a good time. We did had a lot of great things going on and a lot of fun, and I enjoyed it. So until next time on the ATS Mix Show, I will be Dave Rabbit.
And I'll continue to be Johnny Anonymous. We'll see you next time right here on the ATS Mix.
ATS Mix from AboveTopSecret.com is over.
You've been listening to the ATS Mix with Dave Rabbit and Johnny Anonymous. If you have a comment, suggestion, an opposing view, or would like to participate in a future show of ATS Mix, please contact Dave or Johnny at www.AboveTopSecret.com. The views expressed on ATS Mix do not necessarily reflect those of the staff and management of the Above Network, LLC, or any of its affiliates. Thanks for listening. You may now reattach your tinfoil hat. We'll